rested a breast in each hand and marveled at the soft warmth that seemed to wrap his fingers as they sank in. Lena dipped her head, eyes shuttered as she watched him, clearly pleased with the awe in his eyes. "Yours to do whatever you like, boss."
"I'm sure I'll think of something."
He grinned at her and stepped back, shifting his tunic up and over his head. He tossed it aside, but left his belt and pants on as he said,
"But as much as I want to start in on you, I want to see you pose first."
Her expression fell, and she folded her arms in under her breasts, which did amazing things, as she said plaintively, "Please, don't make me." He shook his head and stepped away. The moon was shining off the rippling water, and the sound of the river was loud in the relative stillness. The air was cool, and Lena's nipples were thick and pebbled. He desperately wanted to get to the rest, but if he let her get away from this now, she'd never go for it later.
"I need you to understand just how gorgeous you are to me, Lena. I need you to believe it."
He took a seat in the soft grass, looking up at her as he said,
"I've shown you what you need to do. Impress me."
He made his smile as gentle as he could.
"I'm not going to fuck you until you believe me."
It took real concentration for him to keep his erection from showing yet. He needed to make sure she saw it after she posed, not before. He wasn't a psychologist. He had no real idea what was going on in her head, but he felt that if she was going to really believe him, she had to see his physical response while she was focused on her muscle, not her insecurities. She thought for a moment, and he wondered if she was going to break, but then she pressed her hands together and half-turned as every muscle from her calves to her shoulders bunched and tightened.
"Holy shit."
His eyes widened, and he let his breath out in a low whistle and loosened the belt, pulling it off and tossing it aside. She shivered, then turned around, slowly lifting and curling her arms, hands tightening in fists just past her horns, as her lats spread and shifted under the thin coat of fur on her tanned hide. Her ass flexed and tightened, moving from one beautiful shape to another. Her tail swished across the view and then held still, just the tip curled up as she locked her pose in. Lena was having trouble keeping everything flexed at once, but there was no way he was going to critique her performance. She looked amazing. Genuine power played under her flesh as she moved, and as she turned again, he let her see that he'd discarded his pants and was displaying his erect shaft shamelessly, one fist wrapped loosely around it as he stroked himself lazily. Her eyes widened, and she shivered at the sight of him. She licked her lips as her gaze flickered from his shaft to his face, and he stared back at her with naked hunger in his eyes.
"Those are the only two I remember," she whispered. You really do like it."
He shook his head and grinned.
"Nope, I love it. You're stupidly sexy, Lena. You're the complete package. I know women who'd kill to look like you do, and none of them even come close. You're gorgeous. Come here."
He kicked to his feet as she stepped forward, and the sudden move made her hesitate, then smile.
"I..."
Whatever she wanted to say wouldn't come, but she stepped into his arms, and the kiss they shared was torrid, tongues fencing past hungry lips as hands roamed. He could feel her exploring the lines of his own muscle in a mirror of his own caress, and he made sure to make his exploration thorough. When the kiss broke, he turned her, laid her down, and felt a flash of pride that he had the strength to do so gently, smoothly, and slowly. She felt like she weighed much less than he'd anticipated. In fact, it was easy. As she came back to rest, it was clear she was impressed, and she lifted her upper arms and couched her breasts as she said,
"Don't ignore my best assets, boss."
"Oh, I won't."
He shifted and knelt over her stomach, facing her as he leaned down to kiss her again. His hands smoothed over each bare breast, discovering for himself that they were just as naked to his touch as her belly. Her fur stopped at her sides. Breaking his kiss, he grinned lecherously down at her as he said,
I have a weakness for tan lines, too.
She blinked, then let out a long, lowing moan as his fingers sank into her tit flesh, kneading it lazily. He watched her responses carefully, not wanting to hurt her. In his experience, big tits usually meant low sensitivity, but if she was putting on an act with the way her eyelids fluttered, he couldn't tell. Her nipples were thick, pebbled, and when he touched them, her eyes lit up like Times Square. He felt her flex her body up against his as he played with them, but it wasn't until he pinched them that she groaned and her head tipped back. She arched up beneath him, and the sight of raw bliss on her face was impossibly hot. She was panting by the time he left off, and she questioned him with her eyes as he slid forward.
"Boss?" she asked,
then watched as he pressed his shaft between her breasts. She lifted her arms a bit to press them together as he thrust, cutting loose with a low sound of his own.
"Your tits feel amazing, Lena. God, so soft, warm."
She smirked and shifted, pressing them tightly around him with her hands. He could barely feel the pressure, and it was only when he thrust as far forward as he could that Terry could even see the head of his shaft. She had the biggest pair of tits he'd ever laid eyes on, yet she was so damn fit. Her nipples were still exposed, and he played with them idly as he stroked. Her eyes fluttered, then opened again as he murmured,
"Use your tongue."
She looked from him to the head of his shaft, as it slid out the top of her cleavage, then tilted her head down, and a long, supple tongue applied warm, wet heat to his glands that made him shudder and tighten against her. It became a game for her as he rolled his hips back and forth. The head of his shaft would peek out at her, and she would bathe it in attention before it slipped away again. He did his best to distract her with a bit of nipple play, and by the time he slid all the way out of her breasts, her nipples had grown even fatter and stood out proudly, practically begging to be suckled. He almost did, but a sudden thought in the back of his mind stopped him. The whole reason she was here was that she wanted to be able to produce milk, and right now she wasn't. If he sucked at her nipples, he'd remind her of that, and he didn't want sexy to turn into therapy.
Any more than it already is, anyway.
He shifted, kissed her, then slipped to one side as he said,
"I want you on your hands and knees. That ass is amazing, and I want to watch it bounce."
Her eyes widened a bit, then she smirked and rolled over, shifting to get her knees under her as he settled behind her. He was as hard as a rock, and painfully aware of how much he wanted to bury himself in her. But this was her first time, and he didn't want to make any rookie mistakes. With one hand squeezing her ass, he slipped his other between her thighs and slit them around her sex, playing over her lips. She gasped and dropped from her hands to rest on her elbows. She couldn't turn to look at him. Her horns were too long, but she made desperate lowing sounds as he gently slid a finger into her, then out again. She was hot, surprisingly tight given her size, and getting wetter by the second. He took his time, gently playing with her as she panted and lowed. She shook her ass and begged him to put it in, but he waited, slipping another finger into her and watching as her back arched. He stroked her gently for a few moments, then slid dewy fingers up and paid attention to her pearl. He used light pressure at first, and then took his time finding out what she liked, increasing the pressure until she was rolling her hips and quaking with lust. When she came, it was both abrupt and unexpected. Lena sucked in a sudden breath and let it out in a long, broken low as she began clenching rhythmically under his hand. Creamy juices coated his palm, and he shifted that to his shaft, leaving it glistening as he set himself against her. She shivered as she felt him, groaned as the head slipped inside. He settled his hands over her hips and asked gently,
"Are you ready?"
"Do it. Oh, please, do it."
He thrust, grunting softly as he felt her hymen give, and he hilted himself in her. She shivered and let out a soft whimper, and he held himself still as he waited for her to adjust. Her ass clenched, and he felt her channel squeeze hard around him, making him groan. He lifted a hand and landed a casual slap, watching the offended flesh of her bottom tighten, then loosen again, as though ready for another. Her bottom was lightly furred, and it muted the effect, but he hadn't exactly been gentle and knew that she felt it.
Felt it, and by the way she's moving, enjoyed it.
You can move. Please move. I've been waiting so long for this. So long.
He chuckled as he caught the double entendre and began to press himself slowly in and out again, building his rhythm gradually. She wasn't having it, though, and he quickly found himself forced to match her as she slammed her ass back against his hips aggressively enough to shake him down to the soles of his feet.
Like it rough? Why does this not surprise me?
He usually took it easier on women, but she wasn't exactly breakable, and soon his sweat was splashing across her backside as he gave in to every animal instinct and rode her for all he was worth. She left a heavy coat of cream on his shaft as she grunted and lowed her passion loud enough that he glanced around to make sure there was no one charging in to try and stop the murder in progress. Lena had completely abandoned herself to lust, and though he'd had his fair share over the last few days, Terry quickly found himself at the base of the mountain and grunted,
"Going to come soon."
It wasn't exactly speech, but he got the drift and let himself go. Within seconds, the feeling of his orgasm spread tingling warmth through his middle, and he shifted his hands over her hips and slammed himself deep and held himself there as he let out an uninhibited yell. His shaft swelled, bucked, and flooded her snug channel. His breath hitched in his throat, and then he groaned as he spurted, and the feeling of her twitching and flexing around him told him he wasn't the only one who'd reached the summit of that particular mountain. She'd slipped off her elbows, and her horns were tearing up the grass as she shivered. He felt a bloom of wetness flood out of her and drip down his thighs.
God, that's hot. She squirts.
That was amazing, boss. So hot.
He could tell by the way her voice trailed away that she was only a few minutes from passing out, and slipped from her with a half-baked plan of at least getting her on her back. His legs chose that moment to inform him in no uncertain terms that he'd abused them terribly and they were going on strike. He collapsed on his side, laughing helplessly. Lena grunted as she pushed herself up onto her hands and knees and then settled back onto her butt, her own legs splayed to either side as she looked at him through dazed eyes.
What's so funny?
You fucked me so good my legs don't work no more,
he said, still chuckling.
Gonna need a minute.
It was clear she'd misunderstood him when with wide eyes she asked,
You can go again?
He hesitated, then gave her a speculative look.
For a body like yours? Yeah.
Her expression got a little nervous, and she asked,
Rain check? I'm, throbbing. And sore. It was great, but,
She winced.
Tomorrow?
He laughed, and covered his eyes with a hand, as he shifted his legs out from the tangle they'd wound up in.
Yeah, sure. Just don't go anywhere, honey. I haven't had nearly enough of you.
She pulled herself over and leaned down, kissing him rather chastely as she said,
Oh, I'm not going anywhere, boss. You're mine.
Chapter 12. Past Tense.
When Terry woke up the next morning, the first thing he felt was sore. From his calves to his traps, every muscle group in his body radiated discontent. He groaned as he rolled over on the soft, loamy grass near the riverbank and sat up. The sun had risen and was just clear of the horizon. A few feet away, Lena snored, still deeply asleep. Terry glanced over at the tree and saw Shai seated there, again working a piece of wood in her hands.
Morning,
he muttered, as he staggered to his feet and walked naked into the shallows.
He wasn't certain what time of year it was, or even if the water would have been any warmer in summer. He wished it were summer, though, because the frigid water very quickly cleared the cobwebs from his mind and replaced them with icicles.
"Good morning, lover boy," Shai said, her musical good cheer setting off every warning bell in Terry's brain. He glanced at her speculatively, but she only waved and smiled before returning to her work.
"Too early to even try to figure out why she's so chipper. Maybe she's just a morning person."
He waded out, submerged himself, and scrubbed vigorously, cleaning himself as best he could with no soap. Birds were chirping merrily from some of Shai's branches, and Terry looked up at them warily as he came out dripping and sat down, ignoring the chill as best he could as he started to air dry. Wearing wet clothes wasn't in the cards, and he'd already decided that he'd be going commando until he found some kind of fresh linens for underwear.
"I must confess, I thought you'd wait a few days," Shai said as she looked up.
Her knees were up, and her arms were folded over them. The wood she was working on dangled idly in her hand. He looked at it and saw that it was taking the rough shape of a face, though it had no holes for eyes or nose.
"Was there a reason for me to wait a few days?"
he asked, turning his attention back to her.
"No, I'm glad you didn't, quite frankly. Look at your arm."
Momentarily befuddled, Terry glanced at the wrap on his right arm, still soaked through from his freezing dip in the river. He shook his forearm and winced, then blinked as the pain he'd been expecting failed to materialize. With short, jerky movements, he unwrapped his forearm to reveal the smooth, completely healed skin underneath.
"The fuck?"
he blurted, glancing from his healed arm to his sides. The sucker marks that had been fading but present yesterday were gone as well, though they'd left some interesting-looking scars.
"I guess three's the charm," Shai said, smiling as she met his wondering eyes. "I told you that the bonds you make here go both ways. You give, and you get. And don't say that's impossible. It clearly isn't."
"So you can read my mind now?"
he asked, suddenly confronted with another mystery, one with deeper implications than an inexplicably healed arm.
"Not quite. I can feel how your mind works, though. I get flashes of insight about you."
She gave him the side eye as she said,
"You're far too cynical, for instance."
"Anyone could tell you that,"
he said, brows furrowed. He didn't like the idea of someone having insight into his mind. It made him feel intensely vulnerable.
"Relax, T. I'm on your side, after all."
She held up the mask as she said, "I'll be finished with this in about an hour, and then, with luck, you'll see another bit of magic later today." He nodded, then stretched and groaned.
"If I heal so quick now, why is every square inch of my body so fucking sore?"
Her eyebrow arched at that, but she shrugged artfully and said,
"Just because I know some of what's going on doesn't mean I know all of what's going on. You fucked three of us, remember? Who knows what other gifts you've been given?"
"The gift of permanent doms isn't one I relish,"
he grumbled. She blinked at him, and he added,
"Delayed onset muscle soreness. Happens after working out."
"Well, you did that last night. I was watching. Very hot."
"Yeah, but I didn't work out everything."
He thought saying so would be petty, though, and dropped it as he glanced around for the backpack. Spotting it, he walked over and pulled out a few cantaloupes and grabbed his knife. His food was lacking in both protein and variety, but beggars can't be choosers, and he was hungry. He finished and glanced over at Lena, who slumbered on nearby.
"I saw her eating grass yesterday, but she mentioned she was too expensive to keep earlier. What do we need to get her to eat?"
he asked.
"Torin can subsist on grass for a while, but to stay healthy they need grain. Bags of the stuff. It gets expensive when you have to import,
and that sandy crap near the ocean is no good for growing much of anything. With any luck, though, Lena will wake up sore, too. If she does, she can afford her own damn food and more besides. Shy glanced at the slumbering behemoth, then back at Terry as she smirked. His eyes narrowed as he said,
"Why don't I like the look of that smile on your face?"
Her smirk broadened, and he rolled his eyes and said,
"Let me guess. You'll see."
"Oh, Terry, our bond truly does go both ways."
"You're a shit sometimes, you know that?"
She laughed, and the rich purity of her mirth made him smile despite himself. "I'd have picked a different word in your place. Just because I need your cock doesn't mean you shouldn't treat me like a lady." He glanced up into her branches, where the two birds were still happily declaring ownership, then said,
"You're right. Sorry."
"Oh, don't be. Lena's right. You apologize too much."
"Well, I had two younger sisters, and they both had delicate sensibilities. I got used to saying sorry just to avoid the fights."
"Speaking of them in the past tense already?" she asked, setting aside her work to look at him with a serious expression. "That surprises me."
"Nothing I can do for them now. Not going to see them again. Don't want to talk about it,"
he said, his mood souring as he thought of his old responsibilities. With him gone, things for his family would go from bad to worse. Lisa was unlikely to remain happy with her mobster boyfriend after he'd used her as a meat shield, and Sarah was only 16. His dad was a vicious drunk, and his mother was a drug-addled wreck. What kind of future could his sisters possibly expect to have now that the only one bringing any real money home was gone? He turned and settled himself against Shai's trunk, staring out over the rippling water. There was still dew on the grass, glittering like a strand of gems on the far bank. Beyond that, rolling hills stretched away toward the dark line of what might be a forest on the horizon. To the right, mountains. To the left, open sky as far as the eye could see. The promise of a new start was in the air, but at just that moment, he couldn't appreciate it. Shy leaned into him, but didn't say anything more as she picked up the mask she was working on and continued to shape it.
"If there were a way home, would I even take it?"
He knew the answer to that, and it made him cringe inside. If it were gift-wrapped, he'd take it out of obligation to his family, but he wasn't exactly jumping up to go look for a way to get off Celestine. He didn't want to go home. Not really. Sarah still deserved his protection, but Lisa had put a knife in his back and twisted hard. His parents had both betrayed him long before that, living the lives they'd chosen to live. As for Will was dead. He had to admit to himself that he didn't love his family. He hadn't since Will died. Not really. He could remember a dozen separate occasions when he'd caught himself wondering how much better his life would be if he didn't have to care for them.
"Now I don't. And every time I think of them, I get this rush of guilty relief.
If I could go back and do it all over again, what would I change?"
He knew he'd try as hard as he could, just like the first time. His family had relied on him, yet now he was here, alive, healthy, and utterly unable to care for them anymore.
"Sarah might still turn out all right. Lisa will learn her lesson about blinged-out gangsters, at least. God, I hope they make it, somehow."
He touched the scar between his eyes, idly, then dropped his head back to thump the wood of Shai's trunk, staring out at nothing, his thoughts swirling a drain of survivor's guilt and regret. As was becoming her habit, Shai seemed to reach into his head and pick out his thoughts.
"If you could go home, would you?"
"Yes."
She hesitated. He could tell that wasn't the answer she'd expected. She asked,
"What for?"
He tilted his head to look at her, then glanced away.
"My family is a wreck. They need me."
"Ah."
She put down the mask and focused on him. "What is there for you to go back for?"
He shook his head, but didn't speak. The answer just made him feel guilty for the fact that it came so readily to his mind.
Nothing.
A gentle touch at his forehead brought him back to the present, and he opened eyes he hadn't realized he'd closed, as Shai lowered her kiss from the scar between his eyes to his lips. Emotion welled up in his throat, but he ruthlessly crushed it as the kiss broke. Shai stared deep into his eyes and softly said,
"You died, Terry. Your family will have to learn to make do without you. You're here now, and I need you to stay."
"I'm not exactly searching hard for a way to get home, Shai."
"I know, but you should work through your feelings about it and put them behind you. There is no going back, and you weren't brought here through any choice of yours. Guilt is pointless, senseless."
"Do you think you could have saved your old home if you'd jumped on the front lines and done your best when the monsters came?"
he asked. She searched his expression, as though wondering if he'd set out in that question to hurt her, then settled down next to him again. Her voice was quietly rueful as she said,
"No."
"Yet you feel guilty about leaving them without helping. In my experience, feelings very rarely make sense. That's why we put them aside and do what's right."
He took a deep breath and let it out slowly, and said,
"I did the best I could do. I know that. What bothers me is that I don't know how it'll all turn out. Maybe everyone will be all right. Maybe. But I'll never know."
"No, you won't. And you've started to let it go. Your language reflects that well enough. I'm sorry I brought it up again. I was just surprised you let it go so easily. I can't even imagine what it must be like to die and wake up somewhere else, be thrust into a new life with no warning, not knowing any of the rules."
"You just seem dedicated to pushing me off balance this morning,"
he said, shoulder checking her lightly.
"I'm fine. I'm not unhappy. I'll adjust. I just wish I weren't so fucking sore."
She giggled as he pushed himself up and stretched, groaning melodramatically. A breeze touched his face, and he could still smell the promise of new beginnings. This time, it made him smile. Chapter 13. Florence.
"Are you sure this will work?"
"Hush, T. We'll be at the road momentarily, and you'll see for yourself. Just stay quiet and let Lena and I do the talking."
Terry grumbled. He was wearing Shai's mask and was rather dubious about the claim she'd made regarding its properties. He couldn't deny there was some magic in it, though. What she'd handed over before they'd set out that morning looked like an angular and highly stylized human face. It had no trace of a mouth, though, and impressions instead of holes for eyes. In fact, it had no holes at all, nor any means to secure it to his head. He'd fully expected to be unable to see or breathe when he put it on, but it had simply vanished when he'd pressed the blank wooden face to his own. He was supposedly wearing it now, but could neither feel nor sense it. Shai had nodded with satisfaction, though, and said they'd have no trouble bringing him into the city. They had turned west-southwest when they'd spotted Florence on the horizon, leaving the water, which passed the walled city on the eastern side, in favor of the road. Without a boat, they wouldn't be able to enter from the docks, so they now made for the western gate and the road that left it, which headed for a pass that would take it through the mountains. As they walked, Terry often glanced at the formidable peaks in front of him, girded in the dark green of a forest that Lena had told him began on the far side of the road. The range's upper slopes were bare gray rock, and some of the highest of the mountains he could see were snow-capped. The road showed up as a band of gray against the forest when it finally became visible as they crested a hill and looked down. The city was no more than a half mile southeast, and there was a sizable cleared area north of the road that looked like the place where merchants and caravans stowed their wagons and wains. People swarmed that area, and there was a line of steady traffic in both directions on the road going in and out of Florence.
That's busier than I thought it would be,
he said, glancing from the road to the walled city. From here, Florence looked like it covered something between 1 and 2 square miles, much of that built into the slopes of the mountains. The outer wall skirting the city was an impressive crenellated affair, with square towers built periodically along its winding length, until it abutted a cliff face on both the eastern and western sides. The cliff itself had dark spots that Terry had to guess were windows. They were too regularly spaced to be anything else. The town had an inner curtain wall that enclosed a formidable-looking keep in the shape of a half-hexagon that was built into the mountain and girded by 4 squat towers, each capped with a trebuchet. Florence is the only major city left on the side of the mountains, Lena said. Cecilia forbids most permanent construction on the shore, and over the years, people have learned not to test her. All seagoing trade has to come up the river, making the 50-mile trip from open water to the harbor there in order to offload goods. That's why, despite it being the only even remotely coastal city for hundreds of miles, there's so much foot traffic bound for the mountains.
I didn't know she had that kind of power, Terry said.
Shy chuckled and said, I told you she was powerful, T. She's 1 of the 12. For all practical purposes, she's a goddess.
The 12?
They were walking down the hill toward the road now, which had slipped out of sight behind another low hill. Shy nodded from her perch on Lena's back and said, The 12 are ancient beings who rule vast tracts of Celestine by right of might. All mortal rulers bow before the power of the 12 and tithe to keep their borders. In fact, that's typically what they're called, the powers. Shy glanced at him and added, Cecilia rules the Bancor Ocean, and most of the land bordering it that any river can reach. Her waves have claimed the cities of those who refuse her demands countless times in ages past. She's over 4,000 years old and predates most written records. As memories of Cecilia kneeling between his legs mixed with what Shy was telling him, Terry's mind ground to a halt as he muttered,
Fuck me.
Lena stopped and asked incredulously,
Now?
Shy laughed indulgently as Terry cast them both an exasperated look and kept walking. Shy said, Again, you have the most entertaining turns of phrase. Now perhaps you understand why I was so curious about what power you may have gotten from her.
Yeah.
He looked at his hands and idly flexed them. It still boggled him how completely his forearm had healed overnight, but other than that, he felt no different. He was still sore, but it was a distant, almost comforting sensation now that he was warmed up and moving. He attributed the healing to Lena's influence, though. Had Cecilia really given him something? If so, what? The road, when they finally reached it, turned out to be about 40 feet wide and seemed well-maintained. Slabs of gray rock had been closely fitted together and even had an almost imperceptible slope from the center out to shed rainwater. Wagons, wains, horses, and people of all stripe were carried both toward and away from the city, and despite himself, Terry was impressed with the orderliness of things and how well the road was maintained. People heading for town kept to the south side of the road, while those headed away kept to the north. Terry glanced warily around as they joined the general throng, but no one seemed to give him more than a passing glance. Most attention was riveted on the longhorn minotress carrying a dryad, though no one seemed inclined to speak to them. For his part, Terry kept his head on a swivel as the city drew nearer. Just ahead of him, 2 centaurs were hauling an open bed wagon filled with barrels strapped down with heavy ropes. Both were male, and wore brightly colored green baldrics, hosting sheathed broadswords over well-worn leather armor. Behind them, 5 people Terry would have described as werewolves talked animatedly among themselves. Shaggy fur covered their bodies, and they wore red sashes slung low across their hips. That seemed to be more a fashion statement than any concession to modesty, because aside from the heavy packs on their backs, that was all they were wearing.
I wonder how common it is for women to go topless on this world,
he mused, turning away from the four females and their lone male companion. At least the fur covered everything but the shape in their particular case. Passing by on the left was a woman with flowing red hair and an almost human face. She was digitigrade, though, and her lower legs and arms were covered in thick, russet fur. She had a long, obviously well-brushed tail that switched idly in time with her swaying hips as she walked. She wore a doeskin sleeveless dress, with a V of fringe across her chest, and a broad choker of tiny beads woven in a geometric design. Floppy ears, the same color as her hair, shifted as she listened to her companion, a low-slung portly fellow covered in white fur with sizable erect rabbit's ears, dressed in a black waistcoat with golden buttons. The fact that the dog girl was walking with a staff that practically screamed magic allayed his questions about the odd couple walking away from the town. He presumed that the woman was bodyguarding, but when he looked back after they'd passed, she seemed not to notice the extra attention.
That ass.
Eyes front, boss. You're about to kiss the wagon. He blinked, jerked his head around, and pulled up short, barely avoiding the now-stopped wagon as Shy snickered. Let him look, Lena. I'd have laughed for days and no one else would have noticed. Lena was obviously both embarrassed and a little jealous as she glanced at the increasingly distant dog lady. Terry looked from her to Shy and said,
Meant to ask, why is no one noticing me? The mask isn't hiding anything.
It is, and it isn't. You're still here, but the mask essentially makes you background. Unless you draw someone's attention, they pay you no more mind than the trees or the walls or the sky. They'll avoid you in the same way they won't absently run into walls, but no one will really register your presence. Highly disciplined minds may ignore the mask's suggestion, but its effects are subtle and will go unnoticed by most. I could explain further, but it's not really necessary. Just don't speak to anyone but us, and you should have no problems.
He frowned at that and asked,
And if I do want to interact with someone?
The line of traffic started to move again, as Shy said.
Depends on what you do and how much it grabs their attention. Buying food from a vendor will just get you distracted service. Stab someone in the middle of the street and, mask or not, you'll be the center of attention.
Sounds like something a crook would love to get his hands on,
Terry said as they followed the wagon. The walls gradually loomed higher, coming to dominate the view.
Those things are at least 60 feet high.
Rogues aren't the only people who prize dryad masks, T. Don't reveal it, don't take it off, and don't give it away. I can't make another one as long as that one exists. The power inside it is what makes my tree look ordinary, like I belong wherever I put down roots.
More questions spilled into his mind, but he held off as he heard a voice raised in the unmistakable tones of command. The centaurs hauling the wagon were being questioned, and two guards with the lower bodies of goats and the upper bodies of muscular humans, albeit horned and blunt-featured to the point of being Neanderthal-like, were walking around examining the wagon's contents. The lead guard was leonine, with a full mane of rich brown hair and a head that only had the faintest traces of humanity about it. Bold, slitted green eyes seemed to skewer first one centaur, then the other, as they announced their cargo. He wore a breastplate and falds, chased with silver and gold filigree, along with greaves, terrifying-looking clawed gauntlets, and bracers.
Damn, look at that guy,
he muttered.
Yeah, looking.
Terry glanced up in time to see Lena licking her lips. He blinked, then looked back at the lion man. The fellow was broader than he was, and about half a foot taller as well. Lena still topped him, but only by a few inches. Terry readily conceded he cut quite the figure.
"The fact that he turns you on leaves me with so many questions,"
he said, smirking. Lena looked down at him as the insides of her ears and her cheeks both turned a uniform shade of deep red.
"I wasn't."
"You were."
Shy and Terry spoke in unison, glancing at each other, and laughed as Lena's blush deepened and she let out an embarrassed low. Terry grinned and said,
"Everyone looks, Lena. Trick is not to get caught."
"I wasn't interested, just impressed," Lena said, with an embarrassed twist of her lips. "I spent a long time looking for a man who does more than impress. I'm taken."
"We'll do my best to live up to those high standards,"
Terry said, grinning. The wagon was allowed to pass, and Terry fell silent as the three of them stepped up. The two satyrs seemed not to notice Terry at all, as they focused with uncomfortable intensity on Lena's chest. Their eyes seemed to fix there, and both went almost unnaturally still. While he'd felt no jealousy at Lena's obvious ogling, the fact that these two were stripping her with their eyes did bother him, and it was only a warning glance from Shy that got him to bite his tongue.
"As long as the look-don't-touch rule is in effect anyway."
The lion man actually noticed him, but his eyes seemed to find and dismiss him as unimportant, before focusing on the much larger minotress and the, by comparison, diminutive dryad. Shy had dismounted when they'd reached the road, and was clothed in a dress that seemed to be stitched out of every color of fall leaf imaginable. It set off the wood grain of her skin, and made the silvery green glow of her eyes stand out even in daylight. As Terry considered it, he actually had to wonder if it was actually a dress, or if Shy was just sprouting fashionable foliage. It wasn't like she'd just been hiding it somewhere up to now.
"We don't see many dryads. What's your business in Florence?"
The lion's voice was a rumbling basso, and the aura of command he projected was unmistakable. It was so strong, in fact, that it left Terry wondering what the hell a guy like this was doing on guard duty, and warning bells started to go off in the back of his mind.
"Migration," Shy said, as she smiled radiantly up at him. "Lena and I met on the road, and she graciously agreed to accompany me."
"Lena?"
The man turned his attention to the minotress and asked bluntly,
"Do you produce?"
The question seemed to catch both women off guard, but Lena recovered quickly and said, "Yes." Shy leaned back and met Terry's eyes, her expression a sly smirk, before she returned her attention to the guard captain. The lion man looked Lena up and down, as though considering whether to press for proof. Terry's temper, still simmering as he glared at the two satyrs, who had neither moved nor spoken since gluing their eyes to Lena's tits, began to boil.
"Armor or not, I'll make this pussy eat his own teeth if he goes out of his way to embarrass her here."
His knuckles popped with the force of his clenched fists, and his intensity seemed to draw the lion man's attention. The lion glanced at Shy as he waved at Terry.
"What about him?"
"My bond servant. You'll have to forgive his rudeness, he's not that bright."
That stung him enough to break his fixation, and Terry forced himself to look away and calm the fuck down.
"I'm acting like I'm still in high school. What is the matter with me? I'm trying not to attract attention. Stupid."
The lion looked at him again, but this time Terry made a study of the ground at the other man's feet and kept still.
"The entrance tax is 3 tokens, 1 for each.
Turning his attention back to Lena, the lion man added,
"You can sell your milk in the open-air souk adjacent to the docks, but if you wish to sell in the southern market, you'll need a permit and certificate of worth, which you'll be required to display on request. See a nurse in any of the clinics for the latter, and the tax office adjacent to the keep for the former. Get them in that order. No certificate means no permit.
As he spoke, Lena fished 3 copper coins out of a pouch and held them out. The lion man waved his gauntleted fist back and forth between the heads of his thunderstruck underlings, slamming each in turn on the side of the head, with nothing even approaching gentleness. With indignant bleats, both satyrs shook themselves, and the one on the left reached out for the coins as blood began trickling from a cut on his temple.
"Don't mind them,"
he said, his tone already bored.
"They do that shit all the time."
"Thank you, Captain
Ross."
He held out a hand to Shy, who placed hers in his. He dipped his head and gave the top of her hand a perfunctory kiss.
"Albrecht Ross, enjoy your time in Florence, Lady of the Wood."
"It's so good to see manners after so long," she said, smiling as she dipped her head. Seconds later, they were past the wall, amid a throng that seemed to be going in every direction. The ordered line beyond the wall had become chaos within, and Terry found himself following along in Lena's wake as she used her bulk to cut a swath through the multitudes. The place smelled so strongly of so many different animals that even Terry's dull sense of smell was quickly overwhelmed, and he found himself covering his nose as they moved deeper into the town. The buildings on either side had stone first floors and overhanging Waddle and Dob second stories. Drains ran along either side of the cobblestone street, and Terry noticed as he walked that people frequently glanced warily at the windows above. He began doing likewise. The close quarters of the street eventually widened into a sizable court, dominated by a fountain. People were drawing water from the pool at the fountain's base, but Lena skirted the crowds and plunged down another narrow street on the far side. She seemed to know exactly where she was going, so Terry followed along, trying to keep his eyes in his head. It was one thing to be told that humans were unique in the world. Quite something different to see 1,000 different people of 100 different races, most of which bore no more than a passing resemblance to oneself. Just before they stepped out of the square, Terry caught sight of a raven-haired, jewel-bedecked woman with the lower body of a massive scorpion. Her stinger hung over her head like a deathly lantern as she crouched behind a carpet laid in front of her that was strewn with what looked like handcrafted jewelry. The new street Lena had chosen seemed to be catching a bit of a breeze, which cut the smell considerably, and there was less traffic. Hammers rang on metal here, and most of the bottom floors of the places they passed were open forges. If it weren't for the fact that Lena was moving so quickly, Terry might have been drawn away. Something about the way the sparks flew off the metal being worked had a strange, almost magnetic attraction for him. Another circle opened out, and again Lena chose a street without hesitation. Within 20 minutes of entering the city, she had brought them to an open market square, much larger than any of the other open spaces they'd passed through. It was filled with a veritable maze of booths hung with brightly colored fabrics. Hawkers declared their goods in such a dizzying cacophony of voices that Terry couldn't make heads or tails of any of it. Fortunately for him, they stayed on the perimeter and soon found themselves approaching a pair of rickety saloon doors, each with several slats broken or missing. Before they reached the entrance, sounds of commotion from within the building preceded the body of a man sailing gracelessly out the door to land bonelessly in the gutter. He'd come close to clearing the swinging doors, but one of them flapped open and slammed against the wall, knocking another slat loose in the process.
"Darken my door with fake coin again, and I'll stomp your guts and carve your flanks for steak,"
an angry female voice bellowed from inside.
She sounds like an extra from a Guy Ritchie movie.
Terry looked at the unmoving, clearly unconscious dog man laying in the gutter, and then at Lena, who grinned as she said, "Don't worry. Mama doesn't take shit from anyone, but if you're nice and pay your bills, she's all smiles."
"Pro tip, thanks," he muttered,
casting a last glance over his shoulder as they passed the swinging doors and stepped into the dimly lit interior of what looked to Terry like a medieval restaurant. Circular tables with mismatched stools and chairs dotted the room, and lanterns that seemed to produce at least as much smoke as light hung from the beams that were only a little higher than he was, and which Lena had to crouch to get around. There weren't many patrons, and those few in evidence stared unabashedly at Lena and Shy. A matronly-looking minitress with a small set of curling horns and wearing a bartender's apron that strained to contain the bust underneath lit up like Christmas when she saw Lena. She called her by name as she bustled forward, arms spread wide.
By my tit, I haven't seen you in far too long. Lena, my girl, you get bigger every time I see you.
I thought she was on bad terms with other Torin. What gives?
Terry exchanged a glance with Shy, who shrugged artfully and turned her attention back to the now embracing pair. The proprietress stood no more than 5.5 feet tall, and the short fur that covered her sides and that portion of her thighs Terry could see was the white and black of a dairy cow. She had black hair big enough to have come straight out of an 80s sitcom, and big blue eyes.
Can we go somewhere, Mama Moo? Some things I'd like to talk about in private,
Lena said, as she glanced back at Shy and Terry.
Mama Moo? Are you serious?
Terry kept a straight face as best he could, considering what Mama Moo had done to the last patron to upset her, but he needn't have bothered. The squat minitress barely glanced at him as she nodded vigorously and twirled her hand as she turned, gesturing for them to follow as she led the way through a door Lena had to crouch and turn sideways to fit through. Shy followed, and Terry brought up the rear, closing the door behind himself and turning to find that the room they stood in had a higher ceiling and was lit by much higher quality lanterns. The smells of cooking stew had him salivating, as he spotted the cauldron bubbling quietly away in a fireplace against one wall. Two others, one another minitress, and the other a brown furred male that looked like some sort of ferret hybrid, were summarily shooed out to mind the front. As they passed him, a sudden wave of dysphoria swept through Terry, and he leaned back against an out-of-the-way counter, closing his eyes as his unease in a world without humans abruptly caught up with and tried to overwhelm him. He felt sick to his stomach, and vertigo left him dizzy.
T, are you all right?
Shy's hand slid over his shoulders as she looked up into his face. He shook himself and nodded.
Yeah, fine. Smells and sights are getting to me is all. It's a lot to take in. I'm fine. I'll adjust.
Embarrassment at being caught at a weak moment made his face darken, and he waved her away as aggressively as he dared. Her eyes narrowed, but she let it go, turning back to the conversation Lena was having with Mama Moo. He'd missed the opening exchange, but as he finally tuned in, what he heard quickly drowned out his own problems.
So you did it. That's great you finally took the plunge. About damn time, too. How you feeling?
I'm, sensitive. It's getting to the point where just walking around feels like it's jostling me too much.
Lena paused, glancing back at Terry as a blush hit her cheeks. Mama Moo noticed, and for the first time turned her full attention to Terry. She squinted, staring hard at him. Then her eyes widened.
Bless me, so? Is that...
Shh. Yes. Yes, he is. Please, keep it to yourself.
However did you get him through town?
She asked, as she stepped over and examined Terry, with the sort of air one usually reserves for exotic animals at a zoo.
Ahem, Mama Moo, please, he's not on display.
Shy gently but insistently interposed herself between Terry and the staring minitress, who blinked and said,
Oh, my, where are me manners? Yes, well.
She blushed prettily as she practically forced herself to turn away. It took her a moment to gather herself, after which she said,
Gracious! Yes, and your tits, Lena. You need a good milking. Since you've grown up with your sister, I assume you know the whys and hows of the matter.
Lena nodded, then turned her soulful brown eyes on Terry as she said, "Yes, I can show him what to do."
"Show me?"
Terry began to turn crimson as Mama Moo, completely oblivious to his plight, went bustling about the kitchen, coming back moments later with a sizable bucket and several clean, damp towels.
"Sally and I used a side room there. It's plenty large enough, even for you, dear. Off you go."
Lena reached out and snagged Terry's arm as she passed, and he found himself trailing in her wake, casting a desperate look over his shoulder. Shy smirked and waved, then turned her attention to Mama Moo. He never heard what she said, because a second later the door was closing on a small room that had nothing in it except a stool, a folded-up rug, a very imposing Lena carrying a bucket and towels, and him. Chapter 14. Produce. Terry struggled to get something more coherent out as he watched Lena close the door and turn to face him.
"What?"
she asked, tilting her head to look at him. Her horn bumped the ceiling as she did so, which caused her to glance up in annoyance and shift a bit toward the center of the room.
"You're my man, boss. This is your job."
"You can't... I mean, women where I'm from do this sort of thing in private."
He felt like he was drowning in embarrassment as she shucked her tunic and unwound the sarashi holding her assets in place.
"Well, I'm fairly sure we've established you're not anywhere near there now, and here a man milks his woman."
She finished with the wrap and dropped it aside. Even his inexperienced eye could see that her breasts were riding a bit higher than they had yesterday, and looked firm, almost to the point of seeming fake. She cast him a vaguely uneasy look.
"I wouldn't have thought after last night's fun that you'd be upset about this. I'm the one who has to get down on hands and knees here."
He
trailed off and wished he could melt into the wall. The tops of his ears were so hot, he wondered if they'd catch fire. He hadn't felt this embarrassed since he'd snuck into the back at the video store when he was 12 and got his first real look at all the porn covers. Lena gave him a long, disappointed look and said,
"Look, boss, if you can't handle this, I'll do it myself, but it'll take a lot longer and be a lot less comfortable. Please?"
"Man up, asshole. You apparently did this. Take responsibility."
Terry shook his head and said,
"No, I won't put you through that, Lena. You're right, I'm being childish. What do you need me to do?"
The look she gave him held both relief and lingering traces of disappointment as she shifted the folded carpet out and carefully knelt. The floor here was composed of heavy wood slats, and the carpet would make things significantly more comfortable for her. She settled in a kneeling position as he took a stool, and they looked at each other for a moment, him still flame-faced with embarrassment, her determined.
"My sister explained this, and since you obviously don't know anything, we'll go from the top. Remember, this is a first for me, too. The easiest way to get this started is for you to suckle at one of my tits. According to my sister, when the milk comes, I'll feel it inside. And once it's flowing, I can go over the bucket and you'll be able to coax it out by squeeze pressing."
"Okay, I take it back. This is way more embarrassing than getting caught looking at porn."
He nodded slowly, putting his embarrassment away as best he could. This was something he'd committed to, and he needed to do it right. It was probably as embarrassing for her as it was for him, though she certainly looked more annoyed than embarrassed at the moment, and he looked her in the eye.
"I'll do the best I can to keep this comfortable for you, Lena. Just let me know if it hurts or if I'm doing something wrong."
Her expression softened, and he saw her vulnerability.
"Honestly, boss, I'm really nervous right now.
I was so worried that you would bail out on me.
Wow, make me feel even worse about how close I was to bailing out, why don't you?
Her admission touched him, though.